We're holding on page 138 in Rosh Hashanah, about a little more than halfway down the page, where it says Omamah V'Aleim Omrachana. The middle or towards the end of Oys Tes. We've been learning about the various types of people, tzaddikim, gmurim, rishoyim, gmurim, and beninim, and what happens to them. So before we talk about the judgment on Rosh Hashanah, then we were talking about the judgment. Page 138 in Rosh Hashanah. In the Osius, the middle of Oys Tes. Oh, that's what I'm saying. The page, you have Samach Tes, and then on the back of it, you have 138.
136.
It's 136 by you. It's being misprinted. Okay. All right. Okay.
Middle of this.
Yeah. Okay. So we've been talking about the judgment that Hashem does by the time of Tchias HaMesim, what happens to the Tzaddikim Gmurim, the Rishoyim Gmurim, the Beinanim. So the Gemara says Omamar. So we had said Va'aleim Omrachana Hashem Meimisum Chaya. So we said that Hannah had said on them that Hashem kills and brings alive. Now that Gersa, that's in parenthesis over here, would refer to, we said that that the Beinanim. We said the Beinanim have to spend a certain amount of time in Gehenna, but then Hashem brings them out of there. Hashem meimisum chaya. Hashem kills and brings alive, meaning by tchias meisim, and then murdered Sheol. Hashem brings them down into Sheol by Yoal, and he brings them up. So here, okay. Yeah, give me a second. Yeah, page 118 by you guys. Okay. Yeah, I see that. All right. Okay. So we were saying that so Omar Mar, so we had mentioned the Braisa before about the Beinanim, that they go into Gehenna for a spell, and then with Saftzifin, we said they're Mitzaftzif over there, which Rashi explained means they cry out from the Yisurim, and then Va'olam, and then Hashem brings them up. According to Marashah, Mitzaftzifin meant that they sing to Hashem over there, realizing that Hashem is bringing Yisurim on them for a good reason, and then they come out. So according to the Girsa in parenthesis over here, which is the original Girsa of Ein Yaakov, then we're saying Va'aleim Omrachana regarding them, which now the Gemara is going to discuss what happens to these people who went for that spell in Gehenna and now are getting out of it. What we have in brackets, in the square brackets, Va'aleim Omrachana Hashem Yechatu Merivav, that is the Girsa in the printed Gemaras. And that, we were saying, refers to the ones who fought against Hashem, the ones who that we learned yesterday, the Minim, the Apikorsim, etc., etc. So we said on them that Hashem Yechatu Merivav, Hashem, the ones who fought against him will be broken. And now the Gemara is going to continue with what actually happens to them. So different Gersois, whether the next piece that we're talking about over here is going to be talking about the Rishoyim Gmurim or about the Bein. So Amar Rabbi Yitzchak bar Oven of Pneim Dermin L'Shulek Deira, their faces resemble the bottom of a pot. The bottom of a pot is very burnt. So the same way, in other words, these people, they were in Gehenna. Again, whether we're talking about the Beinanim or whether we're talking about the Rishoyim Gmurim, as the case may be, then we're saying their faces, after they come out of Gehenna, their faces are black like the bottom of a pot. Which, by the way, I didn't mention yesterday because I hadn't come across it, but actually the Namami Fano brings, when we learned yesterday about a group of people, we said that the Minim and the Apikorsim and Pirshim Midachet Sibur and so on and so forth, where it said Yodin the Gehenim, Vini Durdin Rav the Durde Durdus, the judge there for generations upon generations. He says it means literally that, generations plus generations, a maximum of four generations, even though the Rishoyim Gmurim that we were talking about are spending a maximum of four generations in Gehenim. We have, by the way, we have, for example, we have the famous story that the Friedrich Rebbe tells about when the Baal Shem Tov sent one of his Talmidim, Reb Chaim Rappaport, your ancestor, as you've told me, to be Mila, the neshama and the Torah of a Yid that the many years earlier had learned Torah but in a Talmudic way, and he was sentenced to 119 years in Gehenna, and now finally that time is up. 119 years is, roughly speaking, four generations, so that may fit very well with what the Ramami Fano was saying, that's the maximum. Anyway, so... So Rishon Gemurim, actually Rashi had defined earlier, meant Rubam Avonis, people who have mostly Averis. So then, and even there, so that's enough for them to be considered Rishon Gemurim for the purposes of what we're discussing over here. But again, we're saying that within those, you have an even greater, you have an even worse type of Rasha that we learned yesterday, the Minim and the Masorim and the Mumrim and the Apikorsim and so on and so forth, where we said that they wind up in Gehenna L'Dorei Doreis. So again, the Namami Fano says even they are spending on a maximum of four generations in Gehenna. Anyway, so now again, so the next piece that we're talking about over here, when we say their faces resemble the bottom of a pot, are we talking about the Beinanim who spend a short time in Gehenna and then Metzafzefin Ba'olin, that even so they get scorched by Gehenna and therefore their faces forever afterwards are blackened? Or are we talking about the Rishoyim that we said before that wind up in Gehenna for considerably longer than that? Some of them 12 months, some of them even longer. And we said on them, Hashem Yichatu Merivav, Hashem, the ones who fight against him will be broken. So then that would refer to the ones that we just said, the Minim and Apikorsim and so forth. And we're saying that after their spell in Gehenna, for however long it is, then their faces are like the bottom of a pot, blackened. Amar Rava, V'inu Mishapiri Shapiri Bnei Mechuza. Rava says, they are, I'll give you an example, what kind of people we're talking about, the best of the best of the people of Mechuza. Mechuza was the city where Rava lived and where he was the Rosh Hashiva. And Rashi explains these people are very pampered and very well to do. And apparently they were not. They were doing different kinds of aveiros. So those are the type. Rava is saying that we're talking about that those are they're too much into the taivas of olam hazeh. Therefore, their faces are getting blackened by Gehenna l'asid lavo. Umikayan b'nei Gehenna, and such people will be called the children of Gehenna because they're not living in this world for what they should, and therefore they're going to wind up in that situation. Rashi says shmeinim, yeah, monogam shmeinim are you? Yeah, they were pampered and fat, yeah. There's not so much of a matter of calories, it's a matter of, in other words, as Marashah says, they're enjoying too much of the taivas of this world. With that said, though, there is a different girsa, which you find in Kisvei Yad and Gordon Dukdukei Sofrim, that Rava is saying these people, even after they go through that spell in Gehenna and their faces come out black, they're going to be more beautiful than the most beautiful people of Mechuzah in our times. In other words, you have those beautiful people in Mechuzah who, as Rashi is saying, Munogim Ushmenim, they're very healthy looking, fat people. But these people who wind up in that, whether we're talking about that short time in Gehenna or the longer time, they're cleaned up to the extent that now they look more beautiful than even the most handsome people of Mechuzah. There is that, yes. So in other words, what they go through in Gehenna actually has a positive effect on them and cleans them up. So yeah. Okay. Now going back to the Braisa before, we said that Bishilol said, now unlike this Shammai who said that the Beinanim have to spend a period of time in Gehenna and then Mitzafzif in the Olin, Bishilol said to begin with, when it says Barav Chesed in this week's parasha, in the Yud Gimel Midas Harachmim, that Hashem is abundant in Chesed, that means Mata Klape Chesed, Hashem inclines the scale towards Chesed. There is, by the way, a good deal of discussion, and we've touched on it before, among the Mefoshim. Does that also apply to the judgment between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, that also Hashem has Rachmanus on the Beinanim and also tilts the scale for them then? Or are we saying that, no, this is only talking about the judgment, L'asid Lavoi, the one between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, there's no Mata Klape Chesed, and there they have to actually earn it between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. We do mention in some of the slichas, we mention that Hashem's usual way is Mata Klape Chesed, implying that we are at least the Paitan of those slichas understood that to be referring to the judgment of Rosh Hashanah as well. Anyway, so the question is, so what does Beis Hillel do with V'aksiv V'aveseis HaShlichus Be'ish? So Beis Shammai had brought a pasuk that says that Hashem said, I'm going to bring the third group into fire. So the third group, meaning you have Tzaddikim, Beinanim, and Rishoyim. So the Beinanim are one of the three groups. And the Pasuk said, I'm going to bring them into fire, and I'm going to clean them up over there. So that's where Beis Shammai said, you see from that the Beinanim have to spend a period of time in Gehenna. According to Beis Hillel, they don't, because Verav Chesed, Mata Klape Chesed, what are they doing with that Pasuk? And the answer is, Hosam Oven Deposhi Yisrael B'Gufan. The answer is, there you're talking about, that these are Beinanim, but they're poshe Yisrael b'gufon, which the Gemara is going to define soon. What that means, they have some kind of avera with their actual body. And therefore, they're treated more seriously as the Gehenim, as the Gemara had said earlier, as the Gemara had said earlier, that they wind up in Gehenim for 12 months. And then we said their body is burnt up, et cetera, et cetera. So the Gemara says, so those are the ones. So we'll says that it says, I'm going to bring them into the fire. So the question is, what do you mean? We said there's no takana for them. They wind up being 12 months in Gehenim, and then their ashes are scattered under the feet of the tzaddikim, implying that they're, to a certain extent, they're goners. Whereas here we're saying that Hashem is going to purify them in Gehenim, meaning that there is a takana for them. They're going to come out of it. The answer is Hosim Beruba Avonis, Hocha B'mechtza Avonis, and Mechtza Zchuyis. There's a difference. When we talked about at the top of the Amud, and we said that they're going to wind up in Gehenim for 12 months and then they get burnt. That's talking about they're not only but also they have a majority of Averis. So they have a majority of Averis, and among their majority of Averis is Poshi Yisro Abugufan. So they're the ones that it said earlier that their goof gets burnt, etc. Here we're talking about, according to Basilo, that we're talking about where they have exactly half mitzvahs and half avedas. So you have a person who's half and half. So otherwise, he would have been considered a benini, and Hashem would be mate klape chesed. But now this particular person also has the problem of being poshi yisro abugufam. Therefore, it's impossible for them to get away without having to be brought into the fire. Even Beis Hillel is going to agree that they have to be brought into the fire of Gehenim because they had an addition among their half averus is poshi yisro abugufa. And if not, then Hashem tilts the scale towards chesed, and they're the ones, as we said before, that David said on them, Hashem, I'm beloved to you when you hear my voice, as we learned yesterday that Marsha darshins the whole and explains how all those psukim over there refer, a bunch of the psukim over there refer to the Beinanim, and then afterwards it mentions also what happens with the Rishoyim and the Tzaddikim. So they may be Malay Mitzvahs Karim, and that's why that's why we said that they don't end up in Gehenim long term. They're only there for a maximum of 12 months, and afterwards Gufan Nisrefes, etc. But never, because they are Malay Mitzvahs Karim. You're saying because the Gemara says over there that even Gehenim has no shlita over them at all. I guess we could say. I mean, Marsha pointed out that before when we said Nishmas and Nisrefes doesn't actually mean the Neshama is burnt, because the fact is the Neshama being a Chelek Alakami Ma'al Mamash, being a Dover Ruchni, can't get burnt. It means their body is burnt. So according to that, then maybe when he said Poshi Yisrael, that Eishol Gehenim is not Shoyl Behem, will be primarily in the Neshama. So that's true, actually. Yeah, thank you. So that's true. Tosfos does mention. Yeah.
I didn't understand that comment.
Oh, so yeah, actually, no, it's a good point, because Tosfos actually does mention this whole point over here that you do have. There is a Gemara. First of all, there's a Gemara in Bava Metzia that mentions people who go down to Gehenna and never come up. But not never come up means they don't come up so quickly. They have to spend a longer time over there. Malbin Pnei Chaver Barabim and a couple of others. What about the Poshi Yisrael in Ursh of Gehenna Shalat Ispahem? So that's the vote, Tosfos says, because Avraham immediately comes and takes them out of there. So in other words, when we're saying over here in our Gemara that some of them have to spend a longer time in Gehenim, we mean, now the Gemara explains over there, you have, for example, a person who Avraham doesn't recognize him as Gemalot. So then he may end up spending a period of time in Gehenim. But otherwise, Ein Ursho Gehenim Shabbat is Behem, because the moment he gets there, Avraham immediately takes him out. Yeah. No, but the Gemara in Eruvin mentions that point. Over here, it doesn't mention that point, right. But, there is that also, I suppose. Yeah. 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 This is also true. Yeah. Okay. On the other hand, Marsha says the fact is. I mean, so you're saying that. So what are you saying? The fact is, the pasuk says the dira and olam that they're going to be found disgusting by everybody forever, implying we're talking past 12 months. So he says that what it means is, in other words, that they're only going to be in Gehenim for a certain amount of time. But even after that, people are going to find them miustik. Even after that, people are going to find them repellent. maybe Al-Derech, like we said before, because Pneim Dermim L'Shulik Dera, their faces are going to be blackened from their stay in Gehenna, and therefore, in other words, people are going to want to stay away from them. We talked about yesterday, the Oruch HaNer says something somewhat similar. He says, the Gemara had mentioned before about Gehenna Kolam, Ahimeh Kolam, even when there's no Gehenna for them to be punished in anymore, nevertheless, they still have it. Tzadikim are enjoying their reward, and they're not. That could also be Olam can feel like a lifetime. I suppose that's true also, yeah. So Marashah says, Lav Dafka Olam, Al Yubis Chodesh, yeah. Okay. Actually, Tosfos says that, yeah. Okay. Donash Rava continues in this connection. Rava Darshins, my dichtiv or havti ki yishma Hashem, the pasuk that we quoted before. I love when Hashem hears. Now again, in the simple meaning, it would mean that I love that Hashem hears my tefillas. In other words, I appreciate when Hashem does that. But the word havti doesn't really fit for that. It should be chafmatzti or bechalal. What's the chiddush in it? Of course, a person would love when his tefillas are listened to. Omra Knesset Yisrael of Nakarish Bochum means the Jewish people are saying to Hashem, Rebbeinu Shloilam, Amos I ani ahuva lefanecha, when am I beloved to you? When do you show that you love me? Bizman Shata Shemea Bakil Tachnunai, when you hear the sound, when you hear the voice of my pleas to you. So it includes also Eitz Yosef brings a vort also that it means, for example, sometimes you have a person just cries out without even, he can't even get out the words, but nevertheless, when you have, then just the crying out itself that the father or the beloved one hears that and already jumps to do something about it, that itself, that's the Kiyishma Hashem is Kril Tachnuna, just that there's a voice without even being able to express the words, and already Hashem shows his love by listening to that as well. As you have the many stories involving the Baal Shem Tov and other stories like that, where Yid just you have over there with the kid who only knows the letters of the Aleph Beis, you have the one who the shepherd boy who blows with his flute over, plays with his flute over there in honor of the Eibishter. Those are all examples. And Bechlal talks about Chassidus that Tekiyas Shofar is like that. It's a Kol Poshut that and then the Eibishter reciprocates and then listens to that. The pasuk continues, Daloisi v'li Yoshia, I was poor and Hashem saved me. Or we learned previously also that Tosfos had said another meaning of Daloisi can also mean I had to be drawn out, like Kidolo Dololonu, that drawn out, like from a deep pit. V'li Yoshia, and he saves me, meaning Afbi Shadalani b'mitzvahs, even though I'm poor in mitzvahs. Like we said before, we're talking about, for example, a Benini who doesn't have enough mitzvahs to outweigh their Averis. Nevertheless, Li Noi Yoshia, it's appropriate that you, Hashem, it's beautiful that you, Hashem, save me, and you, as we said before, tilt the scale towards the good. Okay, now we mentioned before Poshe Yisroel B'Gufan and Poshe Akum B'Gufan. So what are those? Poshe Yisroel B'Gufan Ma'ininu. Omer Rav Kavkafted Le'manach Tefillin. A head that does not wear tefillin. Now, Tosfos explains a few things in it. First of all, if the person is learning Torah, then that's considered like wearing tefillin. Like we have the famous thing, we have the medrash that men that we've say in the bar mitzvah maimer that tfakir, the person that the Eibishter says we say to the Eibishter we want to be your game batoda yom v'layla, but we don't have the time, and the Eibishter says kaimu mitzvahs tefillin and I'll count it as if. So therefore Tosfos is saying over here the flip side is also true. Then if a person is oisik batoda, then he's technically potter from tefillin. But also Tosfos goes on to say we're talking about over here he doesn't put on tefillin because he considers it a bizoyan. For example, he doesn't want to wear leather straps. He's leather to wear on my head. And in that story, in fact, with that yid over there, the Baal Shem Tov got out of Gehenna after the 119 years. You have Taka earlier in the story that the Frida Kadeva tells. You have where the father, the Shmuel Tzadik, his name was whatever, had raised his kids with that kind of attitude that yeah, who are the tefillin? What kedusha do they have? They're just leather from a cow. So now Tosfos is saying a person doesn't wear tefillin because of that, then that's what we mean over here. On the other hand, for example, if he's afraid to wear them because he knows he needs to have a guf noki and he may not be able to keep them, then Tosfos says that's not what we're talking about over here. There are actually mefoshim. I think the Bach brings that it's not necessarily only tefillin. The Gemara is giving tefillin as an example of a mitzvah that a person does begufoi. But he says, for example, the same way would be if a person, for example, doesn't say krishma, he says would be in the same category. So it's not only deloy manach tefillin, but other mitzvahs of the same vein. Now you do have a number of rishonim that have the girsa in the Gemara over here kavkafta deloy manach tefillin me'olam, that they never put on tefillin. Meaning, according to those rishonim, a person puts on tefillin even once, then it takes them out of the category of the poshi yisrael b'gufan, and that is where we get the whole mitzvah tefillin that. You put tefillin, a yid puts on tefillin once in his life, then it takes him out of that category. And this is where we get in our jargon, where kafta means taka, somebody who never put on tefillin, because once they put it on once, then already they're out of this category. And then they can be in the category of the regular bainanim, where we talked about before, that mata klape chesed. Very much Ashkocha Pratis, by the way. There's been all over the news and all over everything. There's been this short documentary that just came out today that's been all over the place about the making of tefillin, putting on tefillin, and everything, and how they can barely keep up with the demand with everything since the attacks on Simchas Torah. So it's there's going to be, as a result of that, there's going to be a lot fewer karkaftas, and it's a tremendous thing.
What? I went to his son, who was a Israeli guy, the morning. The guy says, no, I don't want. He said, thank you. He's taking the food in his plate in his head.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. There's been a tremendous amount of Esoteris in it in the last few months. Yeah. So that's Poshi Yisroel B'Gufan. So again, a person puts on tefillin, according to many of the Rishonim, even the once, then that takes him out of that category. What? Well, we're mentioning over here Kafta primarily because, I mean, the Shoyad, first of all, the Shoyad comes before the Shorosh. If you're putting on the Shorosh, the Pashtus, you're putting on the Shoyad as well. But besides that, I mean, you could also say, Balabatish, you could say, for example, that you're not always able to put on the hand one. First of all, you may have a person who Pasha doesn't have an arm, but you may also have other, but a person always has a head. So there's very few occasions where a person would not be able to put on the head tefillin, much fewer than the arm. But besides that, also, I think Ben Yehoyada talks about, hey, Yoyz, that the head one is Shem Hashem Nikra Alecha V'Yorim Mimeka. So in a sense, that one is the more important one. And therefore, when a person is putting that on, then he's more Makasher himself to the Eibishter, and then therefore that's the more important one we're talking about.
Sorry.
It can be easier in Ritzayim, but yeah. The Maharal also makes the point over here that when a person puts on tefillin, and since he's Makasher is goof to the Eibishter, so therefore that takes his goof into a whole new category, which is why the Gemara is mentioning specifically that. What do we mean when we mention Goyim who are Pesheh B'Gufan, where we said they also are going into Gehenim for long term? So that means in the case of Goyim, we're talking about that they committed Znus. You have obviously the list of things that are Znus for that are Arayas for Goyim is a lot shorter than it is for us. But nevertheless, you do have such a list. And if they're over on that, then they're the Poshe Ode Kachavim B'Gufan. Why aren't we mentioning the Jews in that connection? So there's a number of explanations, including that it's true, it would apply to us, it would apply to a Yid as well, but by a Yid in addition, you have the point about tefillin. So in other words, there can be two definitions of Poshi Yisrael, but Gufan, one involving tefillin, one involving Arayas, Befrat, given what Tosfos was saying before about Avraham Avinu. The other possibility, which the Maharal and some other Mefoshim point out, is that by a yid, after all, I mean, of course, a yid is also an arayas, but it's not sort of intrinsic to his mitzius as a yid the way it is the way there. It's more intrinsic to his mitzius as a human being. B'chlal, that a human being has certain isurim of arayas. So, but fine, by us yidden, we have more, but still, you can't say in that sense that when a yid commits arayas, that it makes him poshe yisrael specifically, where yisrael would imply something that is specific to the Jewish people, namely tefillin, or as the Bach says, maybe other mitzvahs as well. In both cases, obviously, a person can always do tshuva, right? Tosfos points out, yeah, if he does tshuva, then tshuva tolo, misim amarekas, then there's nothing to talk about in terms of him having to go to Gehenna for any amount of time yet. So we said the average, so before we were mentioning about Poshe Akum B'Gufan, so B'Pashtos, in other words, we're talking about somebody who, other than that, is keeping the Sheva Mitzvah, so he ought to have a certain Chelek Lodom Abba, but now because he's Poshe Akum B'Gufan, then therefore he loses that, and he winds up in Gehenim for 12 months, and then his body is burnt, etc. So it sounds like most Goyim will keep Sheva Mitzvah, no, they're going to have some sort of share in Lodom Abba, yeah. Yeah. Okay. I mean, there's also, you have to remember also, we said at the beginning that most, if not all of this discussion is talking about at the time of Tchias HaMesim. So we can be talking about the Goyim who are alive at that time. There's going to have to be the consideration. Which ones are the Poshe Akum B'Gufan and who therefore have to be sent to Gehenim and their bodies are burnt, etc. versus which are the ones that not, and they get to be around Va'asid Lavay, and they get to be the ones who are assisting us when here Lo Ye'esa Kol Olam Kula El Das Hashem Bilvad, and they're assisting with that.
I'm dying.
So no, we're talking about, in other words, so you have the one, they don't need to die necessarily. They're alive then, and they remain alive, and they're the ones and now been Meir Shana Yomos. They live longer lives than they do now, and during that time, then they're helping. They're the ones that they're the ones who are assisting us by doing the tasks that need to be done while we're meanwhile Yodim Hashem Bilvad. Yeah. Okay. Next, another thing we mentioned in the Braisa before, we mentioned a group, we said people who put their terror in the land of the living. As we learned yesterday, it's based on a Loshana Pasuk. So in context, the Pasuk is talking about Goyisha armies that invaded and terrorized Eretz Yisrael. But here we were mentioning them before among a group that we met, a group of Jews, the Pashtos, because we mentioned Minim and Mesodas and Mumrim and so forth. So what are Vishnos Nuchitisim Be'eretz Achayim? Amar of Chista, Zeparnes Hamatol Eime Yisera Ala Tzibur Shaloy L'Shem Shemayim. It refers to a leader of a Kehila who makes people fear him too, not L'Shem Shemayim. Now he does have to cause them to be fearful. Zroik Marav Talmidim, Marsha quotes. But here he's doing it in an inappropriate way, not L'Shem Shemayim, but rather just that they should have respect for him. So he's in that category that we said before, that they wind up in Gehenim L'Dor Dodos. The Amr of Yehuda Amar Rav, as in fact, Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rav, another thing that we find, a negative thing we find about that kind of leader, Kol Parnes Shematol Emi Yisera Tzibur Shaloi L'Shem Shemayim, Eino Roya Ben Tamid Chacham. Such a person will not see a son who is a Tamid Chacham. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Lochein Yirei Uhu Anoshim, therefore people fear him. And Mao Shaw says the context actually is, this is the last words of Elihu's speech to Eob. Eob has his debates with his friends over there that take up most of Sefer Eob. Then you have Elihu ben Barach al-Abuzi comes in and gives Eob several speeches explaining to him basics of Yiddishkeit and basics of Amunah and Eibishter and so forth. And he finishes off with these words. He's saying that, look, you, Eob, you had children. And what happened to them, as we find at the beginning of the Sefer over there, they were killed in an accident that was caused by the Sutton's machinations over there. So Lochain, therefore, Yireuhu Anoshim, people were fearing you too much because you were Matal Ema on them, Shaloi L'Shem Shemayim, therefore, Lo Yira Kochach Melev, therefore, you do not get to see ones who are wise of heart, meaning to see children, to have nachas from children who are chachmei lev. So this is Elihu, actually, Marsha explains, this is Elihu actually telling Eob that this is why you weren't zoche, that your children are living long, because you acted in this way. So we see that a parnas who acts in that way is not zoche the children, tamina chachamim. And maybe the connection is, in other words, if he had such children, they can give him schus, and therefore he doesn't have to spend very long in Gehenim, because Brom is Aki Abba. But if he doesn't have such children, then they're not able to help him out, and therefore, as we said before, then he winds up for a long time there. Okay. Omer Mar, we continued in the Brais of Ubeshil Omer V'Rav Chesed Mata Tlape Chesed. We said V'Rav Chesed means that Hashem inclines the scale towards good. Now picture, in other words, you have a balanced scale with mitzvahs on one side and averus on the other. So you consider, how do you make a balanced scale weigh more in one direction? So you can have, you can add things to one side or take things off from another, but you can also, for example, you can push down one side or pull up the other side. So the Gemara mentions, hey Fiyavid, so we have a machloikas, how Hashem does it. Rabbi Lazar Omer Koivish. Rabbi Lazar says that Hashem is Koivish the scale. Now, what does that mean? This Gemara is here and also in Erechim. Here, Rashi explains that it means Hashem pushes down the side that has the mitzvahs. So therefore, it weighs down more. Therefore, now the person has more mitzvahs than others. In Erchin, Rashi explains it differently. And that you have in parenthesis printed in Rashi over here means that Hashem hides, Hashem takes off some of the averus from the scale and hides them under the kisei covered. So now the side with the averus is lighter, and therefore now the side with the mitzvahs is heavier. The Shaloh Kodesh brings a third possibility. The word koivish can also mean to squeeze together. So he says what it means is Hashem takes the averus and squeezes them together so they take up less volume. Meanwhile, then the mitzvahs are taking up more volume. So therefore, that ends up giving more weight on that side of the scale. Anyway, Shenemah, Rabbi also says, because the Pasuk says, Yoshuv Yerachameinu, Hashem will return and have Rachmanus on us, Yichbo Shavaniseinu, and he will Yichbosh his averus. So again, Yichbosh he'll push down or hide or squeeze together the averus. So therefore, so that's how Hashem does it. So that's the thing. So over that, that explanation, the matmin and avodas tachas kisei hakavod, is from Rashi on Erchin. Right? That's from Rashi on Erchin. Rashi here on. So because the Gemara is going to point out soon that actually they get temporarily hidden, but they're brought out again if necessary. The Gemara is going to talk about soon. But over here, Rashi is explaining that it means that Hashem just partially takes the scale and pushes down on the side of good, and therefore it weighs down. There are, in fact, a couple of them, Mephoshim, who explain that Rashi gives different explanations in different places because each one fits the context. Here, the context is we're talking within Bishillel's opinion that Mata Klape Chesed, therefore we should assume that it means to actually tilt the scale itself. There, the context is we're talking about how Mishpatecha Toim Rabba, how Hashem's judgments are very deep and we can't vast and we can't possibly understand them. So there, it fits better in context to say that he's taking something and hiding under the Kesach Kovod. So there are different explanations along those lines that a couple of Mephoshim say. Anyway, so that's Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina Amar Noise. Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina says he picks up the side with the Averis. So therefore, now that side is higher. And therefore, the side of the scale with the mitzvahs is now lower down. And therefore, it's weighing more. And therefore, the person ends up l'schus. Again, we're talking about the Beinanim. We said over here that Basilis is Mata Klape Chesed. Maushra brings from the Yerushalmi over here that what it means is Hashem, so to speak, according to Rabbi Lozer's opinion, Hashem, so to speak, takes some of his own schosim, and because Hashem, after all, is the ultimate tzaddik, and gives them to this person, and therefore now he has more, and therefore he has no more, and therefore he has more mitzvahs than Averis. And then the noise, according to Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina, would mean that Hashem removes something from the Averis, side, and therefore now the mitzvah side weighs down more. So Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Noise oven over our pesha." Hashem lifts up the oven and then overlooks and forgives the pesha. So we see that. There's a concept of Hashem noise, of Hashem lifting something up, whether it means to lift up that side of the scale or whether it means to lift something off the scale so that now it weighs less. The Maharal makes a point in it. Basically, it's almost like Sumerav Asetoy. What do we look at it as? Is it more important to Hashem, the goodness of mitzvahs, or that a person should be, and that Hashem himself, when he's judging, so to speak, should be as far away as possible from Averis? We'll reflect these two opinions, whether Hashem is weighing down the mitzvahs more or lightening up the side of the Averis more. And the Gemara continues, Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, Mavi Rishin Rishin V'kachi Amida. Hashem removes the first one first, and that is the midah. That's the midah of Hashem to do that. That's a Rashi's explanation. Means, in other words, what Hashem does is he puts all the mitzvahs and the averis on the scale. Then he takes off the first one, the first avera, and now again, the person was a benin, he was exactly half and half. So now you take off one avera, and therefore it tilts the scale to good. But on the Rava of an Atzma in a Nimchak, but Rava says the actual Avera that Hashem took off the scale over there is not actually erased, but rather it's put on the side, the Ika Ruba Avoinus. If afterwards you have that now, if now you have a majority of Averas, if you have that before, that now with the Avera removed, you have half and half, and therefore that means that with it was more. Then Mech Shabadai, then this one gets counted together with them, and he's back in the category of Rishoyim Gmorim. As we know, that Amman points out in Hilchos Teshuvah, it's not a matter of a simple numerical calculation of mitzvahs versus averas. Only Hashem knows how much each mitzvah and how much each avera weighs on the scale. But ultimately, that's what we're saying. Now, the Rif gives two other explanations of this Mavi Rishin, which on the face of it seem to be very similar. And the Ran says over there, it's very difficult to understand what the difference is between them. First, the Rif brings his own Pirush, then he brings a Pirush from one of the Goinim. That when we say Mavi Rishin Rishin, it doesn't just mean to remove the one Avera, it means to remove up to three. But then Rava is saying that they can get put back on if necessary. So the Ran explained, the Rif, the two Pirushim and the Rif have to do with the question, basically, what does it mean after the three are removed? Is the person exactly half and half then? Or are we saying that no, only if before the three were removed, the person is half and half? So that'll make a difference. In other words, whether they're put back on the scale afterward. The Rambam understands more along the first lines, and the Rambam writes in Hilchos Teshuvah that what Hashem does is, and so actually there's also, the Rambam also explains that we're talking, and the Ran explains over there that we may be talking about a person who basically is basically he's doing mitzvahs, but he did one particular Avera. So as long as he hasn't done the same Avera multiple times, then as we learned in Yuma, the first couple of times Hashem is willing to give him a break because he hasn't gotten so addicted to that Avera yet. Therefore, Hashem will be willing to remove the first couple of times he did it and not count it again, unless it turns out afterwards that now there's still more Averas, then those are put back on the scale and he gets judged for those as well. And the Rambam actually makes a point, that the way Hashem works it now in order to judge the person favorably, if after removing those first three Averas, it's exactly balanced, then Hashem starts removing the Averas one by one and throwing them away. And therefore, the person ends up with only mitzvahs. So a Yochid is three, and the Rambam explains the Rabbim is four. If Rabbim do an Avera, the Rambam brings over there based on a Gemara that we learned not so long ago in Yuma, then the Rambam says for Tzibur, the Eibishter gives them a break up to four times. There is, by the way, it's not so simple in that. Marsha points out over here on the face of it, what does that mean? The fact is, we have other Gemaras that says that Hashem doesn't overlook Averas. Hashem does punish for them, but Hashem has Rachmanus, but Hashem never overlooks an Avera, like to say it's not important. Whereas according to over here, at least according to the first explanation in the Rif, which is also what the Rambam adopts, that Hashem is actually giving an amnesty for Averas. It sounds like Hashem is a Vakra, in a sense. Sounds like Hashem is willing to say, fine, you know what, those Averas, we'll ignore them. Nevertheless, that is how the Rif and how the Rambam are understanding it. That it means that Hashem is being moichel him for that avera and giving him amnesty for it and not worrying about it any further. So according to that, maybe it would mean if a person says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Vatran, that Hashem is willing to overlook and to ignore things, that's a problem, because it means if he says, well, all the time Hashem will do that, so I never have to worry about doing averas. Bashenkin, we're talking about over here for a couple of averas, then yes, Hashem can be a Vatran. What? Yivatran Ma'ori, the Gemara says, Marsha says, in fact, this is when we say in davening, Al tizko lono avonis rishonim, that's hinting at this concept. Don't remember for us the first Averas, because they'll be removed and they won't ever be mentioned again. By the way, again, all of this is only if the person didn't do tshuva for those Averas. If he did tshuva, then b'chlal, you have that, as the Rambam points out over there, as we learned in Yoma, Ein maskirin ledover v'chzi dover, the Eibishter doesn't even bring it up to him because they've all been nimchal by his tshuva anyway. Here we're talking about where a person passed away without doing tshuva on those things. So we'll continue tomorrow, Bess Hashem, and talk about more of this. Yom Yom Mashiach Ugo'ola, Yud Zayin Odor Aleph. We were talking just now about Tchias HaMesim. So now this piece is also more about Tchias HaMesim. What does Tchias HaMesim mean? It means exactly what it sounds like. Neshamas are going to come back in Gufim. And that means, in other words, it means that the Gufim are going to come back exactly as they were when they were alive. Same appearance, same shape and everything. And the Rebbe was talking to Professor Branover and says, why do you find it so hard to understand? We're talking about the Eibishter. Don't think it's impossible for him. Hashem could create the body with all of the complications from it as Ofa Min Hadama. The same way, there's no Pella. The Eibishter is able to restore the body in the exact same form as it was previously in the world. Having many polydover, and then the Rebbe continued. If a person knows what Kodesh HaBrich Hu means, then the question b'chlal has no place. Continuing on the topic of Malachas of Shabbos, if you find fruit under a tree, not only you're not allowed to eat it, you're not even allowed to move that fruit because it may have fallen off the tree today, and therefore it's mukta. By the same token, when you find fruit by a goy, you have to be concerned that he might have picked it today, therefore it would be mukta, and you can't even move it. You have also considerations of tchum. That's another matter, but that's more negea. That may be more negea on yomtiv, but there are dinim involved with that also, which we touched on a couple of weeks back when we were learning in that in Beitza. Another din, you're not allowed to take honey out of a beehive. You're also not allowed to. If you have a honeycomb with the wax and the honey, you can't break up the honeycomb to get out the honey. If you didn't break the honeycomb before Shabbos, then any honey that actually flows out of it on Shabbos is also. But if you go into the hive itself and you find honey flowing there, that would be mukta. That you're not doing any malacha to get. another din, you have fruit that's scattered in the house, you are allowed to gather it up, not considered the malacha of ma'amer, but if there's going to be tircha to gather them, then you're not allowed to gather them too much into a basket at a time. You can just pick one here, one there, and eat them. Okay.